Alex, and welcome to the
What is from
podcast episode one. Yes. Today we're going to be covering the episode Long Day's Journey into Night, and I'm just really excited to finally get to podcast with you. We've been talking for a while about some creepy stuff offline and online, yeah, and COVID line and everything else. For those of you that remember, Lizzie was on Handmaid's Tale a couple of years ago and killed it. And she's also on Brains Gone Bad podcast.
I do my best to kill it there.
You do. Her last episode was awesome. It was an in-depth look at fear and how much it was.
It really wasn't that in-depth. It was just how much fear sucks.
But that's a podcast for a different day. We're recording on Friday, and the reason I say that is because Ozark just dropped, and I got through 13 out of the 14 episodes. And
wait a minute, you started from the first episode from this season?
No. There was 14 episodes in part two, or whatever.
What?
Yeah, whatever it is. There's 14. And I just kept going.
My God.
It's
you know what? You are so lucky I didn't ditch you tonight.
I'm sorry.
I forgot all about it coming on.
Well, you know, anytime you can have Jason Bateman make bad choices and
Laura Linney.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I loved her before this show. Like, she's an actress, actress's actress. Like, she's so amazing.
Isn't she, though? And you want to hate her so much, but you love her because she's so bad. And
but you know what the thing is? Like, if you go back to the first season when they talk about it, Wendy and I can't even think of what his
Marty.
Name is supposed to be.
Marty.
When Wendy and Marty talk about it, when the opportunity comes up to launder money, they've always been straight arrows. I mean, look at them. They look like straight arrows. They are the last people you would think would be involved in what they are involved in.
Absolutely.
They're sitting on the couch and they're looking at each other and they're like, should we do this?
Well, before this turns into a Ozark show, I know Wendy and Rima are going to be doing that on Strange Indeed. But, you know, I just wanted to throw that out there. If you haven't seen that, you can go to Strange Indeed. I know they're going to be covering all the last half of the final episodes. But today we're going to be doing a rewatch for you and a first watch for me of the show from. And what were some of your first impressions on the first episode?
Well, the first time I watched it, I got Epics just for this show.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I did not have Epics, and the word about From probably came up not more than a week before it premiered.
Okay.
And I saw a couple of trailers for it, and I'm thinking that show has me written all over it.
Right.
And then it had Harold, you know, Perrineau on it, and I have to say, like, a little bit jaded from Lost, but that's not his fault.
Right.
But the fact that they were saying, you know, some of the creators from Lost are working on this, I was hesitant. But you know what? Harold was on it, so I didn't care.
Right.
I am going. My cat is going to wherever this town is.
Right.
And I'm watching it, and it was like every little nuance, every frame, everything was like, you need to be podcasting about this. You need to be taking notes on this because you have to figure out what is going on here. And little things would happen. And, you know, and most of my watching is on my iPad late at night when I'm in bed.
Okay.
When I should be sleeping.
Of course.
But that's when I watch mostly everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not taking notes at that point, you know? And a lot of times the eyes droop a little bit. I might fall asleep. Never fell asleep on this. I just couldn't wait every Sunday for a new one to come out.
Well, one of the things that I said, I was doing Yellow Jackets. They're doing a rewatch. And, you know, the one thing about the first episode is there's a couple of pilots that you kind of always remember. I mean, yeah. the first Walking Dead, even Yellow Jackets, there's a couple of them that kind of stick. And that's the one thing about this particular episode, and I've not seen the rest of them, but it's I just want more. And you know, or I feel that this episode we're going to be going back to look at to get answers for future episodes. Again, yeah. I could be completely off base, but I will say that it is going to be a ride, and we're going to be going around in circles like that RV did, and I can't wait. But that being said, I know we're going to normally do points, but just because it's the first episode, I know you want to do kind of moments or characters.
Yeah, so- I want to meet the cast of characters. And the thing is, normally, like pretty much every show works with the points, but there's something different about this show where I feel like we need to set the stage.
Absolutely.
And that's why I want to forego the points this time. Everything else will pretty much stay the same.
Right.
And, you know, next week we'll go with the points.
Yeah, we're going to try to stay to, you know, in terms of recording, just for the listeners, is we're going to probably release probably on Sundays. This will drop on Sunday. But eventually, we're going to probably be releasing once the new season comes, because I know that's in the news, but there is a second season. We'll probably release on Monday or Tuesday, just so that we can get some time to digest it, as well as, you know, feedback or whatever else. But that being said, why don't you go first? It's ladies first, and give us our first point, mystery, whatever.
The mysteries we're going to, we'll discuss at the end, but I think it's important to, you know, meet the characters, and we don't meet them right off, but the family in the RV are central to the story.
Okay.
Because it is about them arriving in this weird little town.
Yeah.
And it's a mama, papa, daughter, and son. And they are on a trek across country. I'm not even sure what the heck they're doing, but we've got dad, who is named Jim. Mm-hmm. Mom is Tabitha. Sister, about 17, named Julie, and the son, who's probably like 8 or 9, he's teeny tiny, his name is Ethan. And so you notice there's like a gap, like an age gap between Julie and Ethan, and that comes out in the episode. There was a child in between.
Right.
So something happened to that child, and this family is fractured. So we know something is off in their relationships because the sister is a little mean to the little brother.
Oh, you think? Talking about the monsters and the and the with the ravens or whatever. They're a murderous bunch of people.
Yeah, the murder of crows and then the kindness of ravens. Because like she's like, you know what a bunch of crows are called, you know, a murder of crows. And
I mean, yeah, you really want her to give you some stories for bedtime. That's for sure.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, when we discover that a child has died in the family, you realize they're all hurting.
Right.
So there's something, like the daughter is going through something, mm-hmm. and she could be torturing her brother that way. And it's like any other time, it would just be good-natured sibling relationships.
Right.
But there's just, it's something a little bit more. And it could be that she's trying to push him away because she's feeling so much pain about having lost the other brother. So if she pushes this one away and alienates him, she can't get hurt anymore. And that's what I see with her.
Well, I will say this, being mm-hmm. the youngest of four, she could just be a jerk to her brother.
And
that's just all it is. And I'm not trying. I mean, what you're saying makes a lot of sense. It's just she's a teenage and, you know, she's not like 13. I think she's probably a little bit older than that.
She's like 17.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, she's old enough to kind of know what's going on. And, you know, they've been in an RV for how long? And it's kind of a little cabin fever and a little of this and a little of that. But yes, the relationship between the brother and Julie and Ethan, you know, it has its ups and downs. And I will say this, though, when they do get in that RV crash, and we're going to talk about the whole details of that, you know, she's as concerned for everyone as the rest of the family is.
Exactly.
You know, because I mean, we've all been there when you're driving around and you kind of get lost and you're trying to figure out what the heck is going on. Well, the best part of your behavior comes out. And
And you don't even want to see me when I'm lost.
Well,
you don't. I'm telling you right now.
Well, I mean, you know, Tabitha and Jim are like yelling at each other. You took a wrong turn. We went slow. I'm going 20 miles an hour. We're going back and forth. And then they do pull over and it happens to be everybody's gathering around for a funeral and everybody and just gives them the cold shoulder.
Yeah. It's like you're in Ireland and you walk into a pub and everyone turns to look at you like, you know, you're just a tourist.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You have to order a Guinness like instead
American
of a real
werewolf
beer
in London and no one will look at them.
Absolutely. I totally get it. And, you know, I just think that how they introduced them was really kind of neat. You know, they talked about Ethan was playing with monsters and it turns out that there's going to be some creepy creepies coming down. But the family unit, it does feel like it is fractured, but it is also a tight unit.
Yeah.
Something has happened. They're on its vacation and there's something going on. So I'm with you 1,000% on that. You know, in terms of my first thing that I want to talk about, it's kind of two of the characters that set the stage for what this place is about, and that's Megan and her mom.
We'll be right back.
Ever wondered what it takes to make it in the movie business? Peel back the curtain with 4-6 Success Filmmaking. 4-6 Success Filmmaking is where filmmakers share their stories and the secrets.
It's beyond competitive out there.
There have been movies that it's taken me 10 years to get made.
Don't wait to create. Like, you've got to just keep making stuff.
Tune in to 4-6 Success Filmmaking for your dose of cinematic realness, direct from the voices that have lived it.
Like, they get right to it.
Oh,
like, that is right at the beginning.
Well, what's kind of neat about the whole first scene is you've got the sheriff who's ringing that bell and everybody is doing their thing and they're like cleaning up and they're doing all this stuff. And, you know, it couldn't have sounded any more wholesome. Oh, listen to your mom, go in. Everybody's kind of, you know, organized well. And then,
Didn't it kind of like when he's walking, when Sheriff Boyd Stevens,
right,
Harold
right.
Perrineau, when he's walking through the town ringing the bell, didn't it sort of remind you of M. Night Shyamalan's movie The Village a little bit?
A little bit.
It's not the same thing, but it had that feeling.
It also felt like Monty Python's Bring Out Your Dead, but that's a whole other thing.
Like if he had turned and said, Bring Out Your Dead, I'm like, wait a minute, I don't even know what to think about this now.
No, but
you know, you can't ever push a cart and not say that.
I know.
And you know what the worst thing is? Is like, you know, I had a science cart when I was teaching in the high school. And
stuff, oh, so
and
you had art on a cart, or science on a cart?
No, science crap. And, you know, you might, I had my room, but sometimes you had to move stuff around, and I'd be pushing that cart and I'd be like, bring out your dead, bring out. No one knew. And then one day, Larry Ruskovich, he was like, Monty Python. And I was like, of all the kids, of course you knew what I was talking about.
Hey, you know, it made your day probably.
Well, yeah, because, you know, other than that, it just made me feel super old. Like, why doesn't anyone know this reference?
Exactly.
You know, but
what was also neat. So he's ringing the bell. He sees Megan. She's on the swing and she goes in and he's doing his thing.
She doesn't want to.
No, she doesn't want to. Just like every kid.
It surprised me. It kind of surprised me that so many people were out and about.
Right.
And that they even need to walk around and ring that bell. But I understand sometimes you lose track of time.
Right.
So,
and then, what I also found neat was they had a chalkboard and it said, I believe 96 nights without an incident.
Without an incident.
And, and of course, you know, she's upstairs and she hears this voice from the window, and of course it sounds like, you know, it's a grandma figure, and tells her to go to the window.
This reminded me of Stephen King's Salem Lot.
Okay.
Salem's Lot. And that's coming out. There's a remake of that coming out.
I also was thinking of the movie Poltergeist a little bit, just a little bit.
Really?
Yeah, well, that's the scariest movie I've ever seen. And what I mean by that is I had so many nightmares from that movie. I can't look at clowns.
I hate clowns.
But that said, it was just kind of, also, you know what it also made me think of is Twilight Zone, the movie in the airplane.
Oh, yeah.
When he opens the window and it's like, ah. Yeah. And then she opens it up a crack and next thing you know, All of a sudden, we've got two dead bodies, and
it is on.
And you know, Frank, the drunk dad, comes over and finds it, and it's interesting how the sheriff reacts, because I know he's trying to save everybody, but he's like, look at your daughter, you know, and he says something that I think is going to probably carry through the whole show. Which is, a man protects his family.
Exactly. That is the first thing that I wrote down. And I think that a lot of what he says here informs who he is.
Right.
A man protects his family. With kids, you got to nail the window shut. And I think that that was the practical thing about, you know, Megan,
right,
you know, opening that, being able to open that window, because why wouldn't they have nailed that shut? The mom is just as much at fault.
Absolutely. No. I mean, there's a lot of fault to go around, but.
Yeah. But, you know, we realize, or we learn later, that there is a fracture between him and his son, Ellis.
Yeah.
So a man protects his family. So what is going on with him and Ellis? You know, because they live separately.
And that, you know, I think family is a big part of this show.
Yeah.
There's a lot of family dynamics, whether it's the deputy and his father and his mother.
Son.
I'm sorry, the deputy and his father. No.
Oh, yeah.
The Asian.
Kenny and his mom and dad.
Yes. Who we have not met at this point, the mom. And then we've got a bunch of other, you know, relations that are there. But it just really seems like family, community, it's important, because especially since you can't go anywhere, so you have to rely on all the resources that you have. So because, that said, I'm sorry.
Well, basically, who you show up at this place with, that's who you have. Like, you have, you know, Boyd and Ellis. You have Jim, Tabitha, Julie, and Ethan. You have the brother and sister.
Right.
You have Kenny with his parents. Mm-hmm. But then we have people like Fatima,
yes.
who is Ellis's girlfriend.
Fatima, yeah.
She's there by herself.
Yeah, so you know? Who knows what
Donna
happens.
Donna is there by herself. The father, you know, the priest or reverend, whatever he is, he's there by himself.
For now, yes.
Yeah, Frank ends up by himself, but the EMT, Christy, she's there by herself as well.
Right,
but,
and that's kind of an interesting point.
Yeah. So it's like you're out driving, you know, me most of the time I'm by myself, or I have Charlotte with me, Charlotte, my dog.
Right.
And so it's either going to be me there by myself or me with Charlotte.
Right. So you'd be stuck with you and Charlotte.
That's fine with me.
I know that is. So what's your next...
All right. Thing. So I think our next main one would be Sheriff Boyd.
Okay.
And we don't know, of course, I know more about him than you, and I'm not going to reveal that because
That's
I
fine.
Want this. I'm really excited and interested to see this through your eyes for the
right.
first time, since I can't go back. But we know from him, basically, he's taken up the mantle of the sheriff in
right.
this town.
We don't know if he's a real sheriff in real life.
We don't know if he's got law experience, like, you know, like police officer experience, or what kind of leadership position he occupied outside in the world. But, you know, he arrived there with his son, Ellis, obviously,
mm-hmm.
because they're both there. And whatever has happened during their time there, Boyd is living down in the town, and
right,
Ellis
right.
is living up in Colony House. So it's one or the other. You're either living down in town or you're living up in Colony
House. And Colony House seems to be more loosely hippie-ish.
It's
hippie-ish kind of.
Yeah.
I mean, when
Love
we meet,
the one
when
you're
we meet
with.
Her son, when we meet his son, Jade, he's doing a pencil drawing of his girlfriend, I'm assuming.
Fatima.
Yeah.
And they're a couple.
Who is definitely not hard on the eyes with that
no.
picture. And
no.
I mean, and God knows he's not either. It's like they chiseled him too. And again, she was very actually happy to see him, which
yeah,
I found kind of
so,
interesting.
Yeah, because Boyd goes up to the house. He's not necessarily welcome.
Yeah, Donna really gives
house.
Him the red carpet.
Yeah, like Donna is the house mother. She's got that position of that house. Don't
okay.
know why. I don't know why. But she does.
Right.
And she doesn't roll out the red carpet.
She's like,
Boyd.
Yeah, you don't come here. I don't go there.
You don't come here. So it makes me wonder what the heck was going on.
Right.
And then, you know, he goes up to talk to Ellis, and, you know, Fatima is very welcoming, happy to see him, but Ellis doesn't want to see him.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Boyd is only up there to tell him that Lauren and Megan have died.
Right.
And later on in the episode, we see Ellis leaving flowers on their graves. He doesn't show up to the funeral, but he does go and honor them. So we don't
I'm assuming
know what the
that he was
is.
He started there and decided to go up there afterwards.
I don't know.
But you know what's really interesting, and I know this is kind of a side note. What was really neat was they had raised a vegetable garden, which I know is one of the things that you like.
Yeah.
On a totally side note.
Yeah, I'm trying to decide if I'm going to plant one this year, because I'm not sure if I'm going to be here to tend to it. Normally I would have had it started by now. Right. I haven't even tilled, but
yeah, I mean,
and the thing is, like, I'm probably going to say, I don't know a lot so that I don't tell something prematurely.
Oh no, that's
fine.
But
sometimes
I
don't know. I don't know. So I don't know what it is between Lauren, Megan, and Ellis. I don't know. I might know, and I just don't remember. But
and that's okay too.
Yeah, it's better that I don't.
I mean,
remember.
I just watched the show right before the podcast, and I probably forgot some too. So
yeah.
Who's
Jade? I forget who Jade is.
Jade's the son.
No, it's Ellis. Boyd says to.
Oh, wait. Hold on. I keep saying Jade. I think
Jade
is the drunk guy. No.
No, that's Rick. I mean, not Rick. Frank. Shoot. Jade Lucy, if he gives you any trouble, Ellis tells Boyd that staying in the RV is. You know, it might become clear.
Oh, right. Yeah, Ellis. I think Jade.
Oh, Jade is the guy in the Audi.
Yeah, he's the other guy. He's locked up.
Yeah.
No, the reason why I thought it was Jade when I was looking at the IMDb, he was like right on top, and yeah. Ellis is a little bit farther down, and right next to Fatima. So anyway, did you have anything else on that point?
No. So we've got EMT is Christy.
Yes.
She apparently crashed in an ambulance because there's an ambulance outside where
Correct.
She's feeding people.
She's kind of like
the letters TRO on it. What's that?
No, and she's kind of like the overall medical person.
Yeah, medical
and
person.
She's like taking care of the Alzheimer's patient, which is Kenny's father.
Yeah.
And I think Kenny has, I think they have crushes on each other. But
yeah.
It's like one of those things that they don't want to say anything because they're too young to figure it out.
Are you ever at that age? I don't know. There's, you get the sense something's going on, but we
right.
don't see. Like, there's some flirtation. But,
right.
like, in it's whatever building that was, it used to be some kind of a store because there's a lot of glass.
Right, yes.
The patient areas are divided off by like drapery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I don't know if you noticed it. It's not like hospital.
Curtains. Oh yeah. No, it's a big
it's
room
like regular
that they're cordoning
drapery.
Off. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And she's playing chess with Kenny's dad.
Yep.
Who definitely has dementia. And I think other ailments. So mm-hmm. and he's staying in the makeshift hospital.
Yes.
And we don't meet we haven't met his mom yet.
No, but so, there is kind of a denial is a not just a river in Egypt moment.
Yeah. Well, I mean it's kind of, you know, it's not like they have the best care. It's not the state of the art stuff.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
And I'm sure it's like a lot of limited stuff, whatever they've accumulated over the years. And then whatever was in that ambulance, it was probably like, oh, of all the people to get stuck here, we've got not only a medical person, but they brought their ambulance with
right,
them.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And you don't know how long anyone's really been there, but you can kind of, I was looking at Kenny.
Right.
He's wearing floods. They're not, you know, like it's kind of fashionable now if your pants don't hit your shoes type
right,
thing.
Right.
But these are full on floods. And I mean, was it something about his socks too? I got to find my Kenny. I think he has like a weird, no, it's Christy that has a horizontal orange stripe on her sock. And it's low instead of like up by the knee. Mm-hmm. And it's not like her socks are rolled down, but you know, I wrote somewhere, Kenny's wearing floods, you know? And the thing is we go into it, we kind of know by the time they're at the funeral that everyone's right. gathered at the funeral, that something's up with this town, that mm-hmm. once you're in. There's no getting out, because, you know, Boyd says to everybody, you know, don't talk to them.
Right.
Remember what it was like for you. And it, I don't know, if someone told you, yeah, Kenny wears floods with white socks. Yeah. So if someone told you, you're out driving around and all of a sudden it's like you're going in circles when you know you've only driven in a straight line, which is what Tabitha and Jim are fighting about. And
exactly.
Jim's like, I'm only going like 20. And every time you see him, he's like Speed Racer going down the street, you know?
Right.
And what would you think if someone said, hey, you're trapped here? I don't think
it's interesting because Boyd and Kenny are like, well, you know, Kenny comes up to him. He's like, do you think they're ready?
Mm.
And then they put the tracks out, which goes back to the fact that when they first show the town, what is the problem with all the cars? They all have
flat tires.
And yeah. One is even in the pool. One's
upside
even
down in the pool. Like, everything is broken down. Like, there's a minivan, which probably was Frank, Megan, and Lauren's.
Right.
Lauren's. And I'm only saying that. I'm stereotyping them as a family. And
but even
that's
the houses,
kind of broken down.
The houses are dilapidated because they don't have paint. They don't have anything.
They're very dated.
And I noticed that. And you know, as watching this the first time, I'm thinking, all right, so they're in a place that they're trapped in. How do they get some of the basic
needs?
Like protein. I mean, you know, how are you eating?
They've got the woods. They can go hunting.
I understand that, but, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how they manage to, if they show that, how are they surviving? I mean, you and I are into a lot of apocalypse type shows. So these are the things that we're always kind of thinking about.
I'm writing an apocalyptic series.
So. Right. So, I mean, you know, trying to find food is going to be a big deal. So,
well, you would think, but they never seem to have an issue. I know I wrote it here. I'll probably come across it when I'm looking at something else, but someone mentions something about animals.
Oh, okay.
And it's referenced in such a way that, you know, they're domestic, you know, like farm animals. It'll probably come up. What was I going to say? There's my note about the orange striped socks on Christy. It's like, when I first watched the episode the very first time, it was cataloging everything almost, you know?
Yeah.
Like looking at Lauren and Megan's house and thinking, wow, that looks like a house from the 70s mm-hmm. that, you know, barely made it out of the 60s type thing. And, you know, nothing's been updated. Everything looks functional. I mean, the weird thing is that those windows should have been kind of sticking, given the type of windows that they were. And the telling thing that Megan says in response to the old lady at the window,
right?
The old lady's like, it's grandma. And Megan looks at her and she's like, you don't look like my grandmother.
And yet she still opens the window.
She still opened the window. So I'm looking at the woman, right? I notice she's got pointy teeth. Right? She's got fangs.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, so vampires. It makes me think vampires. And then what she did was she hypnotized Megan, because Megan says, you don't look like my grandmother, but yet she opens the window anyway.
Right.
And Megan's been conditioned to not open that window. Yet she went against everything and opened the window anyway. And Lauren could have shut the door and left Megan to it, but she didn't. you know, that was her daughter. She could have been as hypnotized or not. I think she just ended up.
I think she was just a casualty of war.
Her daughter. Yeah. She's just a casualty.
I mean, and talk about brutal. They basically ate the inside of her chest.
Yeah. Like the entire cavity is just hollowed out.
Oh, it was definitely FX, you know, a lot of work went into that.
Yeah.
Now, one thing I did want to point out.
Oh, yeah. They have animals. Someone did mention it. Okay. There's my note. Sorry.
That's okay. One thing I did want to point out when I was doing the rewatch right before this was the opening credits. First off.
Can it get any longer?
Well, not even that. Did you watch it? Did you see the pictures?
No.
Okay.
I watched it the very first time. And then every time I watch the episode, you know how it fast forwards 15 seconds?
Yep.
I would count how many times I had to hit it. And I kept saying, you really should go back and watch that.
I'm going to tell you I was never a big fan of like watching the intros. But after watching Yellow Jackets, I think I've seen that intro like a bazillion times trying to get information. But for the people that are listening for the first time, it's all these kids' drawings of like the scariest things, like the creeper people and the eyes coming out with the blood and the house. It's worth watching and it's worth noting.
I'm going to go back because I am completely and utterly shamed. How dare I podcast about the show and I haven't seen it since the first time.
But you know what, though? I think that's great because it gives a little fresh perspective. You know,
I'll go back and watch it when I watch the next episode.
Well, next week I want a full report about that. Ha, ha, ha. Maybe they'll change it up. Who knows? But you know, the music in this is unbelievable.
Yeah, I like that version. My mother would be like, you know, driving, you know, when she shouldn't have been. And she would just be like, que sera, sera.
Right.
And we'd be going right off to the
right off the cliff, like, right off the cliff.
Yeah, that was my mom. But my mom sang that refrain for as long as I can remember.
Okay.
You know? And I love that song, that Doris Day song. But I love it, this version, because you've got this gravelly male voice that drags you down. And, you know, where Doris Day sings it's very hopeful and like, you know, what will I be? You know, like,
absolutely. If
there's excitement about the future. There is no future on this
show. Oh, no, it's definitely a Debbie Downer place. And they're trying to make the best of it, obviously. But the other thing that I did want to try to point out is, what's with the stones?
The talismans?
Okay, is that what they're called? You know,
that was my next thing that I was going to mention. Okay, so we see Christy touch it at the hospital, you know, and it's right by the door. Lauren touches it. Who else touches it? I'm looking. All right.
Well, he does at the end. The sheriff does it at the end.
He takes his when he's going out to the camper.
Right.
Because he already knows it's late in the day. And we haven't even talked about why he's going out there, but and he takes it with him. But you get the sense, like, if you know anything about talismans, you know they ward off evil spirits. Like, that is the basic purpose of a talisman,
right?
And it's got all these symbols on them, and I haven't looked at it up close, and I will. And I know that Epix is giving away these talismans, and I want one so bad. I need one. I live in Atlanta,
of course,
so you know, like, I think I need one for the front and the back of the house. But at any rate, they place them by the door,
right?
And I No, I'm not going to say anything. So at
any rate, place them by the door and like rub them a little bit.
Yeah, they touch them. I don't know if they touch them for luck.
But they always flip them over.
A rabbit. I didn't notice that they were flipping them over.
No, every single time they flipped them over.
All right. I didn't notice that.
Because they did it in the diner. He did it and Lauren did it.
Okay.
So
interesting. Interesting. I didn't catch that. Okay. But yeah.
But yeah, they obviously, they're hopefully warning.
I caught them touching it.
All I know is they're warding off the bad guys or the creepers or whatever you want to call them. The monsters. And it's going to be interesting to see how that all relates to the story. And also how it relates to the two groups.
Yeah.
If it does at all.
If it does, when they discover the family gutted out, the talisman is on the floor.
Right.
And, you know, that morning, the town is standing out in front of that house like they do. And probably because, like, the first person walking by would have noticed that there was an open window on that second floor because it was in the front of the house.
Right.
And Frank is not having an easy time in this town. Maybe he had a drinking problem before they got there.
Right.
You know, maybe they were trying to make a brand new start in a new town because, you know, Frank had a drinking problem. And, you know, at his last job, he punched his boss in the mouth and he got fired. They couldn't pay the rent. And so they were moving, you know, to go live with her mother so that they could start over again. And they ended up in this town. All right.
If that's not true at all. If that's the theory, that's a pretty good one.
Yeah, I just made that up. But at any rate, they end up in this town and it's got a makeshift bar and he sleeps on the floor, even though the bartender is like, hey, man, you got to go home. You got to go check on your family.
You know, it's funny because while you're saying that point, it seems like every single person in the town has some kind of conflict.
Oh, of course they do.
No, but I'm just saying like.
Well, wait a minute. No. You know what? When I said that, that was just really a jerky way to say it. You're right. Because I noticed that too, that all of them have something going on.
They all have, for lack of a better term, either luggage or a skeleton in their closet.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just a matter of figuring out which one.
What it is.
What it is.
Yeah. And so, yeah. And that's the fun we are going to have as we discover what's going on in this show.
Absolutely. And that's why, you know, you want to get to know these characters and what they're doing and why they're doing it. I mean, you go back to the characters, and as much as Donna, the lady that runs the colony, doesn't like Boyd, she still shows up at the funeral.
Yeah, but a lot of the people from Colony House go down for that funeral.
No, I'm just saying, as much of a rift as they have,
they're
still...
They talk.
Yeah.
They don't like each other, or there is something between them, but they talk.
Right, they work together.
Yeah.
And then
we've got the priest or father, they call him father, and he walks around with a priest collar.
Right.
And he reminds me of that dark-haired actor. I can't think of his name, but he was in Sex, Lies, and Videotapes and While You Were Sleeping and Happy Birthday to Jillian on Your 37th Birthday or so. I don't know. Like, what is his name? I can't think of it, but, you know, he was like the rage for a while. But he's much older now.
Right.
Okay. So there's him. We've got Ellis, Fatima. And who we haven't spoken about yet are the two guys in the Audi. Because what happens is they cause an accident that actually roots our family in the town.
Absolutely.
Because the family, they're, you know, as we discussed, are on this road trip and they get stopped because there's a tree across the road.
Right.
And there's no way around it. It's a big tree. And they can't figure out why that tree is there. They talk about a possible localized storm or something like that. But, you know, it doesn't make sense why that tree is there. And so, of course, it looks fun. And Ethan's like, put me up on the tree. And, right. you know, Dad does. And they notice the crows and they go to get back in the van, and not the van, the RV. And this is when they start having the issue.
Right.
They're driving straight, but going in a circle the whole time. And they're starting to freak out because they are like, this isn't right.
We're not going crazy, but we're going crazy.
We're going crazy. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. And I can't imagine being, well, you know what? I've gotten lost a couple of times that I felt like I was in that position. I'm like, I keep coming up to the same corner. And it actually just happened not long ago. And then, because like a bridge was out, they were doing work on a bridge, and I'm still guessing a lot driving around Atlanta. I haven't figured everything out, and I'm like driving in this circle, and I'm like, I keep ending up in the same place, you know. And then one of the times I was like, you know, I'm gonna go left, and that was all I needed to do. It put me right back where I needed to be. So the thing, well, at any rate, they there's this Audi, and it's coming in the opposite direction, you know, facing the RV, and it's driving a little bit reckless, not really sure what's up, but they're driving right at the RV. The RV is like, crap, and Jim drives off the road into like a ravine sort of thing, because the road drops into the woods on the side, and then the Audi crashes as well. And a guy gets out, and that's Toby. He was driving. And, you know, he's banged up. He's got a leg injury that's pretty serious that, you know, Christy is thinking, I'm going to have to take this leg off. Right. I don't want to do it, you know. So they get him over to the hospital. And, you know, while he's gone, then Jade comes tumbling out of the back seat.
Right.
Now, you know, Toby looks like he's on drugs. Jade looks like he's even
high as a kite. He was having fun. He was hitting on the EMT, Christy.
Yep.
He was having a good old time.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it was like a ride to him, you know?
Right.
And let's see. He crawls out of the back seat, not a thing wrong with him. And it's like he's just waking up. Yeah, like he had taken a nap. And you know how they say sometimes, you know, if you just go lax in an accident, you don't get as hurt.
Yep.
So apparently that worked for him. And the town knew about the accident because Toby walked into town and runs into Boyd and Kenny, and so they go out and they see what's up with the camper, and you know, of course, they're a little bit freaked because it's less than 2 hours before it gets started.
And they knew it wasn't the RV people, so we're talking about that. I think he had said, "Were you in an RV?" He's like, "No."
Oh yeah.
That means that, oh my God, there's a lot of people involved, and we got to get these people out.
Yeah, yeah. Something else is out there. This is, you know, because we hadn't seen these two guys before.
Right.
They hadn't started driving in circles, you know?
Right.
So they just get stuck in a way that no one else is getting stuck in. And so, and Jade is like, oh my God, you're all so beautiful. he's like feeling no pain.
Oh, he's loving life. He is just ready for a party.
Yeah. And so then, you know, we go back to the hospital. Toby is strapped down because he's going to lose his leg. And the sister, like, because there's a sister brother thing, and the sister goes over and she kisses him.
Yeah, Sarah.
Sarah. Oh, is that her name?
Yeah, okay, I'm looking right at it. And she's a little freaky.
Yeah. and she stabs him in the neck, like under his chin, and it goes up through his mouth.
I mean, what was that all about?
I don't know. But she did that, like, you know, she kisses him and then kills him. Like,
is she trying to, like, sacrifice him because he's in this world or what?
I don't know. I don't know. Like, it just, it doesn't make any sense.
Wait, you don't know because you don't know, or you don't know because you're playing?
I don't know.
Oh, good. That makes me feel so much better. Because it was the weirdest thing. I mean,
it's like, you know, if she was like French kissing him,
right,
trying to ascertain where she was going to put the scissors, where they were going to stick out, and she was like touching his tongue. I don't know. Like, it was just so weird. It was like very evil of
right.
her to go over and kiss him so tenderly, you know, and he's lucid at this point.
Right. He's like, what's going on?
Yeah. Like, I'm strapped down. They've got this pretty girl. And,
wow.
You know, he was probably thinking something else, you know.
She kissed the boy and didn't like it, I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, yeah. There's just no, it was a weird, looking at it for the first time, that freaked me out.
Yeah. Because, you know, that looked like a Friday the 13th kind of move.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, you know, so far we've talked about M. Night Shyamalan. We've talked about Stephen King, American Werewolf in London. Now, you know, we've got a Friday the 13th move. Like, the thing is, they're integrating these ideas into the, you know, the show, and it's very fluid and it makes a lot of sense and it's not cheesy.
Well, that was, I was about to say, all those gags made sense.
Yeah. And it wasn't just for shock value.
Right. It was for a purpose. At least it seems like it's for a purpose.
Scenes like this, you know?
Yeah.
All right. So, and then we've talked about Kenny and his dad, and then we have his mom. So, let's see.
The only thing we really didn't talk about was the end of the episode. So the son, Ethan.
Oh, they have the accident.
And Ethan has a serious injury.
Yep. And he's got a table leg impaled through his leg.
Right. And they're going to have to do some minor/major surgery in the RV.
And the problem is that the sun is getting ready to set. So we know that there's something with day versus night.
Well, and the other thing is you have this family that is being told that they have to go into town. And the mom's like, hello, it's my son. I'm not going anywhere. And they finally convince her and her daughter to go in. And I believe the father stays. And the kid's conscious.
They don't tell them what's going on.
Right.
Like, they're just saying, you have to go into town. And, you know, the father stays with them. Like, and Boyd pulls out the talisman, right?
Right.
And Kenny has said, we only have 40 minutes of light, but it's going to take a good hour to free this kid.
Right.
And that's just freeing them, not getting them out. Because when they crash, like, they're all in a weird situation.
Well,
like,
yeah, it goes on its side. It's on its side. Only the mother and the father have their seatbelts on because they were in the front. The kids didn't. So that's why Ethan flew like a bird, and it's a really weird thing. And I love that last scene, and that's what really got me kind of hooked and wanted to learn more, which was they were talking about is the RV going to be secure?
Yeah, because no one has ever done that.
Right, and then the last scene is, so imagine the RV on its side, and they have that window above the driver where you can kind of, it's like the bed, and he's got the drapes and all the monsters are outside. They're walking towards him. He's got the talisman and he's looking as he's closing the shade. So,
yeah.
I mean, obviously, they're either going to start at that point or they're going to revisit that point, hopefully, in the next episode.
Because, like, the thing was, like, you know, Boyd is trying to problem solve on his feet, you know, because the sun is setting. I mean, he knows before they even go out there that the day is coming to a close. But he doesn't say anything to him. He starts draping a blanket across. And the father is like, Jim's like, what are you doing? And he's like, well, I'm trying to make the RV safe. And he's like, from what? Because, like, why would you be planning to spend the night when we're just going to free the kid and go into town? This doesn't make any sense. And so that's when Boyd has to tell him, well, you know, he's about to tell him what's going on. But then Ethan starts to seize.
Right.
And so that interrupts things, and then the howling starts.
Remember how many monsters were there?
There were several, but
coming from all directions.
Yeah, and they're headed toward the RV. We don't know. We don't see anything from the other directions. We see it just coming from, you know, toward the windshield, but you see someone dressed like a milkman. Someone dressed like a librarian.
Right.
And those two have like a 50s look.
Mm-hmm.
The grandmother looked like the evil witch in Hansel and Gretel.
She was not modern in any way.
No. But you know, from what I could see, I wasn't getting a time period from her.
No.
You know, because we just saw her face. We didn't see what she was wearing.
I mean, she was wearing like a black... she was in mourning kind of look.
Oh, yeah, you're right. She was. But still, like, you don't
I mean,
know
but it could have been any period. I mean, yeah. I go to church and I get the older church members that look like that, you know?
Oh, gosh. When I lived, I used to live in Stoughton, Massachusetts. And Stoughton, like, when I lived there and where I lived, there was a Portuguese church every Saturday and every Sunday, all day long. Well, every Saturday, all day long. And then Sunday after services, there was one wedding after another. But when I'd be going to work in the morning, I'd see all the older ladies going to church at like 7-8 o'clock in the morning, all dressed in black, you know, the older Portuguese ladies, all dressed in black, head to toe, you know, even with a mantilla, sometimes going to church. And that's right. That's what she sort of looked like, although she didn't look like she was a Portuguese lady. She wasn't talking like a Portuguese lady anyway. But, you know, imagine, like, put yourself in Jim's position and you have no idea.
Oh, yeah. And that's the thing. Like, it's just like,
it's already been weird.
Absolutely.
It's already been weird. And then all of a sudden you're getting the sense, or you're figuring it out, you're not getting out of that RV tonight.
No.
And there's this sense of impending doom. So that, I mean, they end it on such a climactic note where I'm coming back next week.
Yeah, exactly. You're scared the crap out of. And that's what makes this first episode such a grabber. And I'm really looking forward to the other... episodes, because, you know, if you can't get hooked on that, then you shouldn't be watching TV.
Yeah, you're just kind of hard to please.
Do you have any other points or notes that you wanted to talk about?
Yeah. All right. So when it comes to, because they spend a lot of time with the family in the RV, all right? And so when they are showing up at the funeral, someone comments that they're Arizona plates, that they have Arizona plates. Okay. When they start getting stuck, the mom suggests it's like a switchback, you know, like, let's see, you merge getting on, and then you need to do a Yui. Oh, bang a Yui. Because she's like, just turn around and go the other way, bang a Yui and go the other way. And, you know, and Jim is like, I have been watching We haven't missed anything.
Right.
But she's saying, let's go in the opposite direction and see if that fixes our problem. But I don't think that it would have.
No.
You know? Let's see. Jim's hair looked really bad when they got in the accident. I'm just saying.
Okay.
I love that actor. He was in Band of Brothers. It's the first time that.
Wait a second here. Which guy was in Band of Brothers?
The father, Jim.
Hold on a second, because I've been watching Band of Brothers for like three. Oh, my God. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, he is.
Like, he looks a little like when he was younger. And even now, he looked like Paul Rudd. And I was, when I was watching Band of Brothers, which Band of Brothers premiered September 9th.
Right.
Right before, like 2 days before 9/11. And, you know, people were talking about it. And then all, and the segue that, you know, Scooter segue that, you know, 9/11 that morning, that was their big debut.
Right.
And everything got messed up, you know, but, Band of Brothers is one of like the, you know,
it's one of my favorite shows. I just started watching it like this month. And I have to say, I think I've watched it all the way through.
Yeah.
8 times.
Oh yeah.
And, like, and every time I watch it, I love it even more. And
it's so rich. It is so rich.
Well,
like you know, when I met Michael Cuglitz for the first time, like I was doing a panel with him and I was like, you know, my father and I bonded over Bull Randleman.
Right.
We were just like, he was the guy. You
right.
Know?
Bull.
And
well,
then,
it's funny you should say that, because when we were at Fandemic, there wasn't a lot of people at Michael Cutlet's table.
Really?
And he, well, the guy was there at like 9 o'clock. And didn't leave till 6 o'clock every single day.
Wow.
And, you know, it was just a lull. It was like Sunday and everybody was just kind of, you know, BSing. And we talked Band of Brothers. We talked all of his stuff. And
oh, I hate you so much.
But you know what was really neat? I mean, because he's our age. And we were talking, you know, Walking Dead, everything that he's done. And now he's, because he's a director. And he just loves acting, but more importantly, he loves the fans.
Because like he was on Chris Hardwick's podcast,
okay,
and he was just like, you know, how can you not get jazzed about someone that comes up and says, man, I just love this? He's like, I love acting, and here's someone coming up saying, I just loved what you do, like you are so awesome. And you know, that's what I was like, oh my God, is he a real person?
Well, and that was the thing. It's like, I wanted to go have a beer with the guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was just so amazing.
Yeah.
And now that I know who this is.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like,
I can't
even
remember,
more.
I can't remember the character's name.
I can tell you right now. It was,
as soon as we get off, like, I'll be like, oh, blah, blah, blah.
It was David Webster.
Webster.
He was there from the beginning. He did.
Yeah, he was there at the beginning, and then he gets the 101st wound in the butt.
Right.
And then he goes on a medical, and then he comes back at the end. And I quote him a lot because, you know, it's when the Germans are surrendering, and he's like, you've dragged us all the way over here and you have horses.
Oh, I know.
You ignorant, servile bastard.
Oh, I know. And the best part about his character, and hopefully he'll bring it into this character, is, you know, he just has a great way of just speaking, and he's very quick-witted.
Yeah. But he's intelligent. Like, there's this intelligence that comes across from him. And I don't know what he does for a living in the show. And I honestly, I don't know if I know it and I forgot, or if they don't tell us, but you know, there's something very human and relatable about the family.
Right. Absolutely.
You know? And you know, later in the episode, Tabitha references Thomas, the son that they lost, you know, and that she doesn't want to leave. And she references Thomas at that point. And but she calls Ethan Thomas, and Jim has to say it's Ethan that's stuck, you know.
Right.
And she doesn't trust what's going on, because she's like, why aren't the woods safe? Because someone comments that the woods are not safe after dark.
Right, and, right. Absolutely.
And Stevens says, I don't want to bury any more kids. And that's why, like, he's trying to get her to go up to town. She's trying to get him into the RV and to, you know, just get them there. That's what
a lot of moving parts in that scene. And
yeah,
you know, it's just, it's not good.
Yeah.
It's going to be a pretty interesting thing how they explain this to the newcomers.
Right.
I mean, obviously this isn't their first rodeo, but it is their first rodeo with such a bad situation when it comes to the trauma, you know. You know, as an EMT, there's always that term, drunk people never get hurt in a car accident, for the reasons that you said. They're all relaxed, they're not doing anything. The people that tense up are the ones. And Troy, who gets stabbed, he realizes what happened and he starts freaking out. I'm going to jail, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And well, there's no jail, you're just in purgatory.
Or, you know, and they've got New York plates.
Right.
So I just have a couple things that I want to make notes of.
Please.
So when Jim asks for directions, they're just told to follow the road, and they don't give them any specifics. They just say, you'll see.
Right.
You'll see, you know, like, you'll figure it out. But like,
thanks.
There's an interesting thing. Tabitha says there's no such thing as heroes. And then I am pretty sure, like 99.9 to infinity percent, that Julie is listening to David Bowie's Heroes.
Yeah.
On her Walkman or whatever it is she's listening to. Her
No. I understand.
I heard The Strain. It's one of my favorite songs. Mm-hmm. And there's a sound, I don't know what the instrument is, but it's pretty recognizable to that song.
One thing about that is, you know, the more and more I've been doing podcasts and the more and more I've been watching more shows than I ever have before, the more and more I've noticed the music.
Yeah.
And it's funny, because we're at a point now in our lives where our parents were, where we would hear certain, they would hear certain things. Oh, that's old stuff. That's whatever.
Yeah.
And it brings back such memories of a slice in time. And, you know, you just hear a song and it just transports you right into it. And that's what's so great about, because I just was talking about it, Yellow Jackets or this. Good soundtracks are, you can't beat good soundtracks.
No. And they are another character unto themselves, you know, as far as a show goes. And
absolutely.
The interesting thing, or the coincidental thing, is I was finishing the last part of my book 4 this week. And one of the characters, you know, kind of sings songs or whatever. And it was, he was singing Heroes.
Okay.
And, you know, there, of course, there's several different versions of who sings it and stuff like that, and they all sing it differently. And so it was already in my mind. And then I go to watch this episode and I'm like, that's it. You know, I mean, it was just a coincidence, you know, I think, right?
Well, and I'm going to tell you, there's some songs out there, the cover is better than the original.
Yeah. Yeah. But every version of this song, you know, like David Bowie sings it one way.
No. Absolutely.
Like, they evoke different emotions, you know, and, you know, she's listening to the David Bowie version of it. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember what my comment was. Sorry. But then, you know, Peter Gabriel, it's like his version is very, very sad.
Right.
The Wallflowers version is total destruction, you know, because like that's what it's all about. And then Ewan McGregor, when he sings it live, it's very happy, it's positive, we're in love, and you know, and there's a lyric exchange that doesn't show up in every version, you know, because it's like, mm-hmm. you know, I'll be mean, you'll be mean, and I'll drink all the time. It doesn't show up in every version. So I don't know why they cut it out. But, you know, but that's all I have to say about that. So as far as I can tell, I think I've hit on all the characters.
I think we've done a good enough job to introduce everybody. For those of you that haven't watched the show, I shouldn't say watch the rest of the episodes. There is a lot of mystery to this. We're going to talk about that in just a second. But in terms of characters, I think we covered just about every character.
Yeah, that we met that time. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what we know about them. Mm-hmm. All right. So that brings us into the solving the mysteries.
Unsolved mysteries.
So, yeah. Dun, dun, so dun. We know we've got two main factions. We've got the town and we've got the colony house.
The colony.
So the town, you know, we've got the sheriff going around just before nightfall, ringing a bell, trying to get everybody.
He's kind of the head.
What's that?
And he's kind of the head of
the. Yeah, he's kind of, yeah, the leader. Down there at the bottom of the hill. Everyone's got a talisman at the door. Mm-hmm. A lot of broken down cars. Oh, and I forgot how we ended the episode, because we've got our characters in a truck and they're racing to get back to town, but they're going to go for Colin.
Oh, and they have to run. And they run as fast as they can.
Well, because they forgot to pull up the nail strip.
Yep, the nail strip.
Yeah, and all the tires on the truck are flat. So they're running to Colony House as fast as they can. And of course, Julie and Tabitha don't know why they're running.
Right.
So at any rate, all the houses and buildings are just really run down. We've got the sign just outside that says 96 nights without an incident. Which reminds me of The Walking Dead when, mm-hmm. you know, what's her name? Emily Kinney's character.
Oh,
Beth.
Yeah.
Beth has the sign, you know, 30 days without an incident. And then all the cars, they're all flat. Let's see. There's railroad tracks that they kept crossing. Mm-hmm. They do have animals. We don't see them, but we know that they have them.
And it's funny, if they have animals, why aren't they getting attacked?
Yeah, that's a good question. And then Sarah and Nathan, someone commented about where they could be from, but someone says, no, they're from Boston. So that's the sister and brother, Sarah and Nathan.
Yeah, like I said, there's a lot of interesting things that are going on here. A lot of questions that need to be answered.
Yeah.
And what the heck are these people or these creatures, and why?
Well, hold on. All right. Cause I've got it. Like, we've got the town versus Colony House, what's going on there. And Colony House is just like free love, free living.
You got it.
Man. And then, all right. And so then the other side of this are the creatures.
Right.
So what do we know about the creatures?
They need an opening of some kind
to get in the house,
to get into the house.
But it makes me wonder if they have to be invited in, because Megan told her that she could come in.
Right.
So do they just need an opening, or do they have to be invited? They only come out at night, and they're coming from the woods. And, we know that the grandma looking one had sharp teeth, like had fangs.
Yes, she did.
And we know there's her, there's the 50s milkman, the 50s librarian looking lady, but there's others.
Yes.
It's not just them. So that's what we know so far.
Yeah.
All right. Do you have any random notes?
No, I mean, I think we covered everything.
I just have one random note.
Oh, please.
All right. Bubbly shows up 4 different times. Or is it pronounced Bublé? The drink.
Oh, I guess they must have paid a lot of money.
There were 4 product placements in that RV of that product. That's my random note. That's all I have.
I'm going to have to come up with a better random note for next week. But that's a good random note.
Yeah. And the only other one I have is like this episode is called Long Day's Journey Into Night, which makes sense given right. what's going on. But there's also a play by Eugene O'Neill, and it is about a dysfunctional family trying to come to grips with its ambivalent emotions. Right. So in the face of serious familial problems, including drug addiction, moral degradation, deep-rooted fear and guilt, and the life-threatening illness. Mm-hmm. And didn't we come across pretty much all of that?
Yeah, that was kind of the episode in a nutshell.
Yeah, because we've got the drug problem with Toby and Jade, right? Mm-hmm. Deep-rooted fear and guilt. Well, there's Frank, right? And then life-threatening illness. And it's interesting because Ethan's got his leg impaled, which he could end up losing it, right?
True.
And then Toby's gonna lose his leg,
right?
And then plenty of familial problems, and it's not just, you know, the RV family. It's Ellis and Boyd.
Mm-hmm.
How Donna fits into that, Lauren, Frank, and Megan. We don't really know about Nathan and Sarah that much.
No.
But we know, you know, Kenny is dealing with an ailing father. You know, like, what do you do
right.
about something like that, you know? So there's that.
There's a lot of different dynamics. Every single story has a backstory that hopefully that they're going to shed some light on.
Yeah.
And the main story that we need to find out is creatures versus why are they there?
Yeah. Yeah. What's going on with that?
What the hell's going on?
So I'm going to start my bulletin board with my push pins and red string.
Oh, geez.
I think we need one for this.
Yeah. We're going to definitely need a map of something.
Yeah.
After all this.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, all right. So we do have news from the sheriff.
Oh, please.
Okay.
Go for it.
So after watching the entire season, I was like, geez, you know, am I just going to be left hanging here? No, I'm not. It's coming back for a second season.
Yay. And,
you know, it seemed like the way they announced it, even the people on the show didn't know what was going on. Although I know they did.
Right.
You know, before us, but it seemed like it was up in the air. They really made it sound like it was a big surprise.
Right.
The show itself has a Rotten Tomatoes score of 94%. So other than that, we don't really have any other news from the sheriff, but we do have some listener buzz.
Okay. Do you have those?
Yeah, I have 2. So Alma Contreras says, oh, cool. I mean, I already watched it, but like I had no one to talk to about it. So it will be so nice to hear what y'all thought.
Well, we can't wait to dive into all these episodes, and hopefully you can tell us what you think as well.
I like that Alma is on my end of things.
Right.
You know, and then there's Joe Levine. And okay. He says, the first episode definitely had me hooked. I can't wait to hear the discussion. And so he's on your end of things.
That's awesome. Can't and wait to be
you're
scared
not
the crap out
I'm
of.
Not alone.
And,
yeah.
You know, I have somebody to hold the blanket with me when and put it over my eyes with me.
You and Joe?
Joe and I. Yeah. We do have a voicemail from mm-hmm. Steve Brown. And
Steve Brown.
Let me just see if I can...
Hey, House Podcastica. This is Steve, and this is from Season 1, Episode 1. I didn't get a chance to record a live Steve of it. I'll try next week for Episode 2. But I'm so glad you guys are podcasting on this one, and somebody is dissecting it and going to give us a really good rewatch of it. I have watched the whole series, so I'll try not to be spoilery in when I do live Steve. But I know what little I remember of the first episode is they go right in. Like they don't dance around the idea of these wraiths or whatever they are. They show them to us right away, and we get how violent this series is going to be and how bloody it's going to be right at the jump. So, which really surprised me, even for an epics series. But hey, I can't wait to hear you guys talk about it, and I can't wait to interact with you on it. All right, talk to you later.
You know, that was really good. I'm so glad I did get to hear that. And he's right. Like, they start right in. Like, they are not playing at all. They have character development. They have story development. They knew what they were doing, or at least it appears that way when they started shooting the show. So I'm so excited to have seen it. But honest to God, Alex, I am so thrilled that we are doing this.
Well, I am too. And, you know, like I said to you a couple of weeks ago in Atlanta, I would have podcasted anything with you if it was the weather or anything else. So I'm just so happy that we had picked a show that is exciting and spooky and fun.
Yeah.
And
it's deep.
It's
so many notes.
It's so many notes. So, that said, I want to thank you for helping me out with this on our first show. And I want to thank everybody for listening. But why don't you tell people how to contact us if you want to send some feedback?
Oh, if you want to leave us a message, you can find our contact information at Podcastica. I don't know. I've had problems with that all along. Podcastica. And it's so awesome. .com. So while you're there, you know, check out the other shows, because most likely I'm thinking you're probably already a Podcastica fan, but this is not the only show if you are new to Podcastica. One reason why I suggested From was because I couldn't find a podcast, and trying to find a podcast on a show called From is not easy to search.
I know there isn't a lot of podcasts about the show, and on House Podcastica they're doing Better Call Saul, as well as obviously Walking Dead cast is down the home stretch.
Fear. They're doing Fear right now, but I think you have to be part of Patreon for that. But you guys are doing Yellow Jackets. They're just starting the second half of Ozark,
and they're doing, I know Jason and. Is Moon Knight,
which I'd never heard of until they started podcasting it.
Absolutely. So, it looks like it's a full season, and we've got a couple more episodes. Ha ha ha.
Yeah.
Next week, we're going to be covering episode number 2 called The Way Things Are Now. Going into that, it's probably going to be, hello, this is where you are, and this is what you got to do to live. I'm kind of excited. I might have to go watch that right when we get off, just so I can get a first look at it. But
start thinking about it.
Yeah, just so I have it in my... I like to watch stuff a couple of times, just so I can, especially with this show. I'm not a Lost... I've never watched Lost. I know, I'm the one person...
Oh, my God, what's wrong with you?
I know, I probably shouldn't be doing this podcast.
Oh, my God. Because, you know what, the first time I saw Harold Perrineau was on the show Oz.
Right.
And that's in capital letters. And it's about a prison.
Right.
Prison scares the crap out of me. Like, I never want to go to prison. I never, ever, I won't make it there. You know, like, unless it's the prison on Seinfeld, you know, that of the girl that George is dating, I could probably handle that.
Right.
But I never want to go to prison. And here I am watching this show. And at some point, there's another actor that is prolific. And he's in everything. And he was on that. And he was such a bad guy that anytime I saw him afterwards, I was like, I hate this guy. I just hate this guy because he played such a bad character. But Harold was played a character that was in a wheelchair. And they did a lot of really neat camera angles with him. And
Christopher Maloney from
not Christopher Maloney.
Oh, okay.
No, I love Christopher Maloney.
Okay, I wasn't sure.
It's like, I think he's PK something.
Oh, JK Sim.
You're on the right track.
JK Sim. He was in Whiplash. He's been in a whole bunch of stuff.
He's in everything.
In the Stand. Vernon is his character in Oz.
Oh yeah. Awesome. And then, you know, the next time I see Harold, he's in Lost. And I'm like, oh my God, like, this is awesome. This show's going to be awesome. And he plays this really great character. And then Michael sails away and that's the end of it. And so it's not like, I don't know. I just haven't had the time to really follow actors. And all of a sudden I see that he's in this. And I'm like, I am on that ship. And I am going there.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, at any rate, so next week we'll be talking about episode 2. If you haven't had a chance to watch it, this is a good time to go watch it or rewatch it. Like me and Alma, we're going to be rewatching it. So that's our show.
Thanks for listening, and make sure you get home before it gets dark. We'll see you soon.